It's week 13, 2021, and let's just say that rising tides float all boats. People love shopping online, and the Hudson Bay is launching an online marketplace. YouTube will auto-detect products and videos if your favorite YouTuber wasn't clear enough about who was sponsoring their content, and global supply chains are fucked. Let's get to it. So welcome to Clickbait and Switch, a marketing podcast that tries to cut through the bullshit and hook you up with what you need to know, what you don't, and what stories are getting more love than they're getting. I'm Mark Dolinsky, and on the other mic, Gisella Slizer. First, we're going to start off with some Canadian content. The Bay has launched an online marketplace. Do you want to break this one down for us?
Yeah, so I think they're preparing to launch it. Actually, they haven't launched it as of yet officially. But either way, it's coming. It's there. The goal is to build a well-curated one-stop shop for Canadians. And of course, it's an opportunity for brands to break into the Canadian market because they will be accepting brands from other countries. The Bay says it will bring more than 500 new sellers to their website by the end of the year. So they're planning to introduce and significantly expand categories that they're offering already on the website, namely some sports and recreation stuff, tech, pets of special interest to me, health and wellness, as well as interesting vintage designer handbags and watches. Wonder what that's going to look like. I'm not sure that's going to be secondhand. I think it's more of a firsthand wannabe secondhand.
Well, it's interesting that watches have been such a curated boom market over the past couple of years. The high-end style. So it's interesting that the Bay is going to sort of swoop into that. I mean, they've always had one of those really large watch sections on the main floor of all their buildings. You know, once you get past the perfume, and then you can get into the jewelry and watch section. So, I mean, it makes sense. But if they're going to get into that vintage resale market, that could be quite interesting. But maybe that's not what they mean. They just mean watches in general.
Yeah. Either way, you bring up a good point, which is for the brick and mortar shopper that walks into the Bay, it was kind of an outdated, kind of stale feeling to the store. I don't know when the last time we walked into the Bay, but it was always like big and kind of empty and messy. So I'm kind of glad to see them tap into a new territory for them. I think it's going to breathe maybe a little bit of new life into the business.
One thing I loved about the Bay was that it just didn't make any sense. Like, because there was one really close to our office in downtown Montreal. So every now and again during lunch, if you had nothing to do, I used to walk through it just to give myself something to do. And then the first level, you got your jewelry, perfume, Nespresso corner. But then as you go up, there's like women's clothing, men's clothing. And then there's like the furniture floor where nobody is. Like, you can be in there all day and I don't think a single person would come and see you. And then you keep going and then, oh, look, here are some stoves. And the kitchenware and all that sort of stuff. And then if you go to the top, there's a restaurant that nobody was ever in. I love it. I've always found it very weird. It's this parallel universe back to something that used to exist a long time ago.
Yes, totally. So with the new marketplace, I smell some ad opportunities that they're going to probably tap into. It's not confirmed, but I'm sure it's coming. What the CEO did hint at already is an emailable database of 5.7 million loyalty customers, which is huge for any brand that's trying to tap into the Canadian market. Assuming these loyalty customers are mostly Canadian, this will be a very interesting opportunity and a very non-insignificant competitor to Shopify and Amazon.
Yeah, because you've seen these other companies diversify their offering with allowing their platform to be used by other people. Amazon's done it for years. Walmart's getting into it. And so now the Bay is doing it in its own way, which is pretty fascinating. I think that's the longest anyone's talked about the Bay in, you know, a decade.
There you go. Except for the Animal Crossing scenario. They put products in Animal Crossing, remember? So they're really leaning into more digital. They were one of the first brands to kind of have a placement in the video game.
And they were always really good at shipping. It would ship really quickly to your door. They got into that pretty early here in Canada. So you could order things online. They shipped it to you and then you could return it in store. It was always pretty fast and convenient.
But before we dive into shipping, let's talk about YouTube.
Yeah. First, let's talk about YouTube doing some more stuff that may or may not piss you off later. So YouTube is going to launch an experiment that will auto-detect products and videos and provide related content links if you weren't being targeted by enough advertising in your day-to-day life as it is. They're going to help you seek out more stuff. This is a test so far, seemingly expanding from an earlier one back in 2020. It's intriguing. What do you think?
Yeah, well, YouTube would automatically detect an item on a video and based on that, provide related other videos. So I see it interesting from a content perspective. If, say, for example, I'm watching something and there's I don't know, a blender, and then it links to recipes of cool and healthy food I can cook using a blender. But I'm not sure it's going in that direction. It might be more about shopping related products. So kind of like you may also like you have on Amazon or any e-commerce site. But what's interesting also is the word detect, which they chose to use to define their test, because some people believe that this means they're not only just going to read the titles and the descriptions of the video, but they're actually going to like use the algorithm to look at what's going on in terms of imagery and audio in the video to literally detect, you know, smart detect products.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. To be honest, it worries me a little bit that's going to just become like Instagram and any other social media platform and lose the beauty of the content. YouTube is already becoming very, very loaded with advertisement, unless if you pay for a subscription. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, seeing YouTube as an actual shopping platform is different. Like consumers often use it for research. They look through the videos to get inspired or watch reviews and watch products, but it's never been like, you know, with Instagram having its sort of store space thing, it's never been like that. I mean, you could always link out, you hit the link, you do all that sort of stuff, but I wonder if they're making it a bit more overt.
Yeah, that's it. So with this new test, what they're trying to do is keep people on the platform longer. So you wouldn't exit the platform to see more information about the product. You stay within it. So it's a little bit of an ulterior motive, of course. Yeah. Should we talk about shipping?
Oh my God. So let's talk about shipping and when globalization and the global economy goes wrong. So this has been big news the past week because the Ever Given, a shipping container, got wedged diagonally into the side of the Suez Canal because of a dust storm. That's what we're being told. It's the size of the Empire State Building. It has 20,000 containers on it. It is a big plug, or was, it's now free. But everyone became a logistics expert last week. And it's funny because we were already sort of looking into this because shipping, and specifically shipping containers, have been having a weird moment. You know, bottom line, supply chains and shipping backlogs were already bad before this happened. And this has just aggravated an already big problem because at all of these different ports, there are massive delays. There are shipping container shortages, which are reducing the ability for manufacturers to get these products into the containers themselves, to get them onto the ships, which are then already being delayed once they hit all these ports.
This is all a result from the pandemic, right?
It seems like it got exacerbated because of the pandemic, because, you know, we had production delays and stuff, and then everybody just kept buying the same amount of stuff, if not more. And so you've had all of these places being backlogged, but it's interesting. It's going to start hitting some of the stuff that we love the most. Let's just say coffee. Let's start with coffee.
Oh my God.
Right? Everything starts with coffee. There's been a recent drought in Brazil too, which is kind of like another problem because in working with Muskoka Coffee here in Canada, Muskoka Roaster Coffee Company, we've looked into coffee quite a lot, and it's such a fragile plant. And there was a drought last year. So there is a lack of coffee already. Shipping containers, they're having trouble getting what coffee there is back into North America. It's pretty fascinating. How have you been feeling about all this?
I don't know. It feels a little bit like doomsday because I'm not sure what solutions are. What we're seeing is that, first of all, like you said, everybody's a logistical expert right now, which has a positive part to this because we're all understanding a bit more what's involved in getting the products that we want to get. So we're becoming a bit more of a conscious consumer. Hopefully that's going to lead us to be more conscious shoppers. But yeah, it's just crazy. Everything is being disrupted and it's set to continue being disrupted. So it brings me back to how we're all thinking about shopping local to support our local communities and the stores we like. But there's also further implications with relationship to the logistics change. If we shop more local, then there's less shipping that needs to be involved. Of course, this is like a way deeper discussion and I feel way out of my waters talking about it because we're talking about sourcing materials. And a whole bunch of different things. I mean, global economy is built around shipping product currently. So we're talking about reimagining the way economy works in the world, which is insane.
Well, up until now, 90% of all goods were shipped on boats. And that's why the blockage in the Suez Canal was such a big deal. Every single year, 1.2 billion tons of cargo moved through that canal. And that's just one of them. Then there's Panama Canal and people could just go around. They don't take the shortcuts. So it's fascinating that there's so much of the stuff being shipped all around the world. There's shipping container problems and shortages, probably because Justin Steinberg wants to make too many houses out of them. But you have people like the biggest producer of wood pulp, the raw material that's used to make stuff like toilet paper, they're having trouble getting their pulp into these containers to get to the processing facilities to be turned into toilet paper. So if you thought last year was kind of a snag when everybody had their run on toilet paper, you might have toilet paper and coffee going up in price. And another thing you're starting to see companies consider is air freight. Now, air freight is significantly more expensive. So then the question becomes, how does this impact your consumer? Because we've seen a lot of different companies with delays, shipping delays, product delays. You know, it takes forever to get a Peloton. One of our friends, Mavu, who you heard on the NFT podcast, if you're a loyal listener, he was considering getting one, but the delay to get one was so long that he thought, I'm just not going to bother. So there are already these massive delays. So if you start considering that the problem is getting so bad that companies are considering flying things, which is way more expensive, that cost has to be borne out by the consumer. So you might end up paying a lot more for some of your products because people have not been able to get them into where they need to be fast enough.
None to mention environmental concerns. So essentially what I think we're going to see more and more, hopefully, is global brands finding local producers and local distributors and ways to produce closer to the consumer, or to somehow split up in little local places, maybe a shift in that direction. But ultimately, I think what we need to do is reduce our consumption and reuse, which is something that we're going to talk about a little bit next week, right?
Yeah, next week we're going to tackle some products and some things that are trying to help out that whole issue of reducing and reusing.
Secondhand becoming the first choice.
Yeah, if it wasn't having a moment before, it's certainly going to have an even bigger spotlight on it in the coming months.
That's a good way to wrap it up in a positive note.
Yeah. So thanks, Cloudwerk, for providing support for the podcast. And we should state that these opinions are ours. And obviously, we are not logistical experts. But hey, we did do some research.
Or environmental experts.
No, we're just concerned citizens.
Concerned marketers.
That's true.
Thank you, Xavier, for editing. And thank you all for listening. Subscribe. Give us a rating.
See you next week.
Bye.